Protests against Iraq's election results turn violent. Parties that suffered losses insist last month's poll was a fraud. People are increasingly frustrated at the political system. So what's next for Iraq? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Rob Matheson. Iraq's Prime Minister has opened an investigation into violent protests against last month's election. At least four people were killed on Friday when security forces opened fire to clear demonstrators in Baghdad. Dozens more were injured. The Fatah Alliance of pro-Iranian political groups had called the demonstrations. Early results show the alliance won about 15 seats. That's down from 48 in the previous parliament. The biggest winner appears to be the party of Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. The Electoral Commission began a recount of some of the votes last week and says so far the results haven't changed. But that hasn't stopped the protesters' claims of fraud.
These protesters are citizens who came out asking for a manual recount of the election. It is their right, written in the constitution. These are citizens who came out from all the provinces, Basra, Amara, Diyala. They were citizens asking for their rights. Yesterday, a catastrophe happened.
Al Jazeera's Mahmoud Abdelwahed has more from Baghdad.
Funeral procession was held for those who were killed in Friday's clashes between protesters and security forces near Baghdad's Green Zone. Now, these protesters who have been occupying this area for the third week, now they're supporters of the previously dominant political parties that lost in the October legislative elections. Now, these protesters say they are trying to put pressure on the Electoral Commission, on the government, to hold a manual recount of all the votes. Now, the Electoral Commission, on the other hand, says it has conducted a manual recount of about 25% of the votes. That included the disputed ballot stations. But the results, according to the Electoral Commission, the results are identical. They're not any different from the previous results. Now, these protesters include many military individuals belonging to the Popular Mobilization Forces. The Popular Mobilization Forces are the military arms of the political parties that lost in the election. But it's interesting because some of them took part in the crackdown on the anti-government protests back in 2019. Now, these protesters say that they will continue protesting here until their demands are met. They're accusing the security forces of using live bullets and tear gas canisters against them on Friday. Mahmoud Abdelwahed for Inside Story, Baghdad.
Iraq's parliamentary elections were held a year early. That happened because in 2019, thousands of mostly young people rallied for political change and an end to corruption. But only 43% of voters cast a ballot, the lowest turnout in 18 years. OK, let's bring in our guests. In the northern Iraqi city of Erbil, we have Azin Mustafa. She's a pro-democracy activist. In Istanbul, Ahmed Rushdie, he's a director at the House of Iraqi Expertise Foundation. And in London, Renard Mansour, director of the Iraq Initiative at Chatham House. A very warm welcome to each of you. Renard, I want to start with you. How do these protests that we're seeing now compare to protests we've seen previously?
Well, I think what we've seen in the last, 24 hours or more is a protest in the Green Zone, not from the same demographics that we saw from October 2019, those youth. No, these protests in the last few days, yesterday and today, are from people linked to certain factions that didn't do well in the elections, primarily linked to Fatah, the alliance that represents the popular mobilization forces. So having lost many seats in the elections, going from 48 to around 17, they're protesting the election, the electoral law, the whole process, because they didn't do as well. And really what they're trying to say is, this is our power. Elections aren't the only tool for government formation. Here we are, and we're you know, you could hear us loud and clear. So it's very much part of what happens as the different elite come together to form government, notwithstanding the direct results from the elections and these groups that didn't do as well as they had hoped.
Mm. Ahmad Rushdie, what is going to happen if these predominantly Iran-backed groups who object to these results don't get what they want?
Well, I'm absolutely agreed with Rinald in a way that the one who lost the elections actually now protesting. But I think the most important thing is not the Fatah. The most important thing that the brigades outside the Fatah, the real pro-Iranian militia, like Rab'Allah, Hezbollah, Nujaba, and so on, all of them, they are not inside the Hashid. So the problem will be if they don't have a real political background, like they actually pushed a bloc like Hukuk, who lost in the election. It's supposed to be that Hukuk will win at least 20-25 seats, that it will back those militia in a way or another, that they will have their own umbrella, their own political umbrella, which is different from Fatah. Now, what's happened yesterday is that even the leaders of the Fatah go there, like Qais al-Khaza'ali, he went there asking people to just calm down. But also, it is a very important move, it was a very important move to stop the political campaign that Muqtada al-Sadr did. Because what Muqtada did, first he changed his negotiation team, which it gives us a message, is that the negotiation team, the previous one or the former one, was not eligible to rush up things. The second thing, he lead actually this negotiation team, this is new negotiation team, to make a political campaign. Why? To start to raising up his idea about getting the biggest bloc into 170 seats. How is that will happen? He went to see Halbousi, he went to Hikma, he went to see Al-Abadi, and also his negotiation team, so KDB negotiation team in Baghdad. And what I knew is that he also was ready to go to Erbil to see Masoud Barzani, to speak about making some sort of a majority government. Now, what's happened yesterday, it was very important to stop all these actions. And we also, what's happened, Sayyid Muqtada went from Baghdad, go outside Baghdad, went to Hanana, which show you that how much the action that happened yesterday was very important to try to balance things in Baghdad.
So just to be clear, the actions that we saw yesterday were predominantly, in your opinion, geared towards stopping a campaign that was being put forward by Muqtada al-Sadr, as opposed to an anti-government campaign that we have seen in the past. Azim Mustafa, I want to ask you about the level of turnout. I was in Baghdad in 2018, and even at that time, people were on the streets protesting about corruption. They were protesting about the poor infrastructure, which is endemic, of course, in Iraq. And yet, now we get to these elections and the turnout is so low. Why is that?
Well, Rob, the reason why the turnout is so low is that people have no more trust in the government and they have no more trust in the system. And they clearly said it, that even if we go and vote, it's the same political parties that who will win. And the problem was not only with the political parties and the systems and the same faces, but also with the new electoral law, which made it impossible for independent candidates or the smaller political parties to win, even though despite of this electoral law, independent candidates have won. But the problem is, what is going to happen now? Is the government formation going to be any different than before? That's the question. And the people knew this, even though in 2019, in October of 2019, they were the ones who demanded for a change. And that's the reason why the elections happened earlier. But it was so clear for them that no, there was going to be no change. That's why they did not vote. Unfortunately, the turnout was so low, lower than it has ever been since the fall of Saddam Hussein in 2003. And this has caused many problems because when the people no longer believe in the process, then they have given up on their country, really. And this is one of the biggest problems that we have right now. And let's not forget that the protests that happened on Friday are totally different than the protests that happened 2 years ago. The protests which took place in 2019 were because people needed their basic rights. They needed electricity, they needed clean water, they needed job opportunities, and they needed a better health education system. This is what they were demanding. So we cannot compare those people to the protest which happened yesterday on Friday, because that protest which happened on Friday was led by external powers and led by external people.
Ahmed, let me ask you this. Iraq's parliament, if I understand it correctly, is designed to have representation from a wide variety of cultural and religious backgrounds and groupings within Iraq. We have to remember that Iraq has a very disparate array of different cultures and religious groupings within it. Now, on the face of it, that seems very laudable, but it seems to, the very structure of it seems to lead us to what appears to be a perpetual stalemate in Iraqi politics, with situations that you and Renard were talking about earlier, where there is horse trading going on, there are deals being done, people are trying to get hold of the most important, the most lucrative, if you like, ministries. How much of that is driving the problems that Iraq is currently facing?
Well, I think Iraq now facing three main problems with its new political system that established after 2003. Number one, legitimacy. Now, legitimacy, it can be given by the people. And we all know that the turnout was very low. It shows you how much people desperate from this political system. This is first. The second thing is that who is getting benefit from the low turnout? It looks like that the Sadr bloc took the majority, 73 seats. But at the same time, even the Sadrists get only 800,000 votes from all of Iraq. And if you are counting the Sadrists, especially in the Sadr city inside Baghdad, which is Baghdad 8 million, they have 2 million in the Sadr city. And the Sadr city, the one who eligible to vote is about 1 million, 1 million and something. So you can imagine even inside the Sadrists, they also has a low turnout. But what the Sadrists did is that, this is push us for the third thing, is the new law. The new law, yes, the Sadrists get the majority, but also it gives 20% for the independent candidates. So it shows you that there is a chance. If this law stay there, there is a chance in the next elections, which may be in one year. Let us not forget, if a compromise happened, which I think it will happen between the Sadrists and the others, that means it's only for a one-year government. Then after that, there will be demonstrations led by the Sadrists, because they're always doing something like that. It's their political behavior. Just 1 year, take your ministries, take your money, that's it. Finish the government. So I think if this law will stay there, it will push us for a new hope, because we already have 20% independent candidates, that means, or independent MPs now. That means in the next government, maybe this percentage will be higher.
Mm. Renard, we are talking about groups, of course, which have weapons and have demonstrated in the past that they are prepared to use those weapons. Given everything that Ahmed has just said with regard to this law, how confident do you think you could be that this is not going to spiral into another scene of violence that we have unfortunately seen in the streets of Iraq in the past?
I think there's two things here to note. One is the question of whether these groups, all political parties in Iraq, have arms. It's a heavily militarized society. Whether the Sadrists on one side and Fatah and Maliki on the other side will actually come into a confrontation. People in the past have kind of predicted at some point you might have an internal Shia civil war. I think, although we will see tit-for-tat violence, it's highly unlikely that that will happen. Right now, what's happening is the Fatah and Maliki are trying to remind the Sadrists that, you know, a government being formed is not only on who wins at the ballot boxes, but it's much more than that. And we are here, and we have weapons, and we have force. And so that gives us a seat at the table. And so because of that, just like in the past, I think the Sadrists won't have the appetite to go to an all-out confrontation, which means that that war within the different groups will probably be minimized, even though we will still see tit-for-tat violence. But there's another kind of violence that's important, which is the violence that has been suppressing the protest movements and civil society, in particular since 2019, of October. That has become solidified. The Iraqi political system has viewed protests and civil society as the biggest threat. All the parties have come together, notwithstanding their differences, inside the state and outside the state, to work together to suppress, to repress mobilization of protest and civil society, those independents, this youth generation that's increasing every year more and more, are under fear. So if the lessons of 2018 election was that many Iraqis didn't think that voting could bring about change, sadly, a lesson we're learning and that we've learned the last few years is that protests are a far more dangerous game than they used to be. For the last few years, you've had a systematic campaign of assassinations of any leader who could mobilize independent protesters. That campaign continues, and it's sanctioned by the state. And because of that, a lot of civil society, if not all, live in fear of mobilizing. And that's why we don't see as many protests as we would have in October 2019.
Azin, how do you mobilize people and energize people to take to the streets in support of democracy, in support, if they want it, of political change, if they are facing the kind of threats that Rinad says they're facing?
Well, I absolutely agree with Rinad. The problem is, the people are very scared. They are scared for their own lives because when there is a protest, there are innocent people who are just demanding their basic rights and they want to live in peace and prosperity. But there are external groups who come and join. And these groups not only kill them at some point, but they threaten their families even after their death. And this is the real problem. People are scared, but there are some others who really want to make a change, and they keep on fighting for these rights. But it's impossible in a society that is so politicized, where there is so much guns and weapons with every political party, and where there are external powers that we don't even know where they can be and when they can join the protests. Because I am sure that when an activist or civil society or normal youth go on the streets, they do not want violence because they are already tired of this. Our people, our youth are tired of the life they are having right now. So when they go on the streets, all they want is peace. But the external powers and the political powers do not want that. And not only them, but yesterday, one of the independent candidates who won, there was an attempt for assassination, but he survived. So it's not only for the civil societies or the people who want to protest, but also for the independent candidates who have elected themselves. And the question is, who is behind all of this? And why are we allowing another country to come and rule for us? And these are all points we need to focus on. And the thing is, we need to make our youth believe in the voting system again. Because even though some people say there was fraud in the elections which happened last month, the IHEC, the Independent High Elections Commission, should come on TV to announce the real results. They should bring back the hope in people and say that if there was fraud or if there have been complaints, what the complaint were, the complaints were, and to explain all of this, because the government and the whole system owes that to the society, to explain what has been done and how the process was and what should be done in the next steps.
When you talk about the independent candidate who was attacked, you mentioned yesterday, we're talking about Friday, that's correct, isn't it? Yes.
Yes,
Renard, I want to ask you, because we're referring constantly to these, quote, external powers that appear to be taking action inside Iraq and appear to be doing so with no responsibility, no accountability whatsoever. Let me ask you this. First of all, can we identify, or are you in a position to be able to identify who those external powers are? Secondly, if Muqtada al-Sadr is placing himself as a nationalist and he refuses any outside influence, how likely is it, do you think, that voters in Iraq could actually follow Muqtada al-Sadr if it meant an end to the external powers interfering in Iraq that Asim was just talking about?
So, I mean, since 2003, Iraq has been a playground for external actors. It was a government brought to the Iraqis from abroad. The decisions of how the Iraq system would be formed was made abroad. And since then, really, Iraqis have been at the behest of external powers. Initially, it was the U.S. occupation. And then increasingly, of course, the most dominant external power has been Iran. But of course, let's not forget as well Turkey's role in particularly northwestern Iraq and its influence there. So really, Iraq is in the middle of these very strong regional powers, and the strongest being Iran. Iran, which has strong ties, not just to the sort of, you know, the Shia militias that we often look at, but to many Kurdish parties, many Sunni parties. Iran has strong ties into the Iraqi formal government, outside the formal government. It's by far the strongest external power. And it's, you know, it's not perfect, and it's not, it makes mistakes, and it's not as strong as some would say, but compared to the other regional and external actors, Iran is definitely the strongest one. Now, government formation since 2003 has been influenced by external actors, Iran leading the campaign, but also the Americans are involved, the Gulf, I mean, Turkey, every sort of country in the region and abroad that has an interest in Iraq is able, because at the end of the day, that sort of bottom-up power of the Iraqi system isn't there. Many of the leaders don't have enough. Now, this leads to your second question on what, you know, will Muqtada al-Sadr do? Although he's won, he doesn't have enough to, on his own, form a majority, which means that he'll have to bring certain parties together. And he has tried, as was said, to bring together, for example, the KDP and Mohammed al-Halbousi side to gain a majority. However, he will be threatened. He will have to, at the end of the day, come to the table. So while his initial ambition is to create a majoritarian government that excludes the Fatah and Maliki and those groups that are seen as closer to Iran, I believe at the end of the day, it will still be a national consensus government, just like it has been every time a government has been formed. And we're beginning to see already that, you know, for many months now, the negotiations over that.
Ahmed, let me bring you in here, because is there a structure of government that you think might be possible, given everything that we've just talked about, given the situation in Iraqi politics at the moment, that could actually lead Iraq forward out of this perennial hiatus that it seems to be working in and has been for several years?
Well, Rob, what's happened yesterday, it looks like it will stop the train of Muqtada al-Sadr in a way or another to make a majority government. It looks like at the end they will compromise. They will reach the compromise. And I think the mediator will be Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, who is actually taking in concern the file of Iraq. And maybe the negotiation started from yesterday night. And the message is now is that everyone is looking for a compromise, but how it will be managed as a compromise? Does the federal court will go for manual counting of votes? On that way, only on that way, maybe there will be change of seats. But even the change of seats will not very will not make a real difference. Mm-hmm. But eventually, changing of some seats, number of seats, it will give, a push for a new negotiations between all the Shia inside the Shia house to try to unite themselves in a way or another. Mm. But let us not forget, I think the new government, if it is will be formed in a compromise, the prime minister will be also a compromise. Mm. That means the prime minister will not be backed by those blocks. Mm. He will be independent, just like Mr. Khalid.
Ahmed Rushdie, thank you very much indeed. And thanks to all our guests, Azim Mustafa, Ahmed Rushdie and Rinad Mansour. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, goodbye for now.